the sun. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham, and with us today, new guest of the show, Mr. Alec Lace. He's got a very popular parenting podcast called First Class Fatherhood. You can find it at firstclassfatherhood.com. How are you today, Sir Alec?
I'm doing great, Justin. Thanks for having me on board here.
Oh, pleasure. I'm excited. We're doing a little simul recording here where we're going to do the Dad Podcast, and then after this, I'm going to go over and have some fun on First Class Fatherhood. So again, if you want to hear both of us on his show, it's a great show. 15 minutes every day, a nice quick hit. Again, you can find it at firstclassfatherhood.com. The link for that will be in the description of this episode here. Every time we have somebody on the show for the first time, I run them through a little bit. Wait, hold on. Now I have to find my note. Oh, man, now I'm going to look like an idiot right here. Oh, here, I found it. So I want to run you through this series of questions here, Alec.
You're going to run the gauntlet here?
You're going to run the gauntlet, my friend. First question is, your hall pass list or person. Are you familiar with the hall pass, sir?
The hall pass?
The hall pass is the I don't know if you're married or not. Are you a married man?
Oh, yes. Happily married, 13 years.
All right. So the hall pass, and I don't mean to accidentally destroy your decade-plus marriage in one fell swoop here, because if this is a concept I'm introducing that has not been introduced into your relationship yet, I apologize. But what this is that there is a list of celebrities that many married couples will have, and that if said celebrity were ever to approach one Alec Lace of First Class Fatherhood fame and say, I am into fatherhood and first-class lifestyles, so I'm willing, alive or dead? You could go either way. But either way, okay. I want to bed you right now, Alec. But for the sake of necrophilia not being an option, this person, if they have passed away, they would be alive for this example.
Okay, thank goodness.
And that your wife would be, it's agreed upon that if said aligning of stars ever happened, that you would not be in trouble. It would be like, well, of course you would.
All right, well, I'm going to shock you. I don't think you get this one very often, but Ann Sheridan, that's my girl.
Ann Sheridan. I don't even know who that is.
All-time actress. She's in my favorite movie of all time with James Cagney, Angels with 30 Faces. She's in all kinds of old-time mob movies. She's a sexy redheaded girl back from the 30s there in the roaring 20s era. Oh, what a doll.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see that. I'm looking at her now.
Always go for it. I don't know if you've ever seen that. The original Postman Always Rings Twice, but that Lana Turner in that white little bathing suit there, that can do a number on you.
Man, you are a guy who was born past his time, it sounds like.
You know what it is? My father actually was a stand-in singer with Eddie Fisher during the 50s. So he kind of brought – I was the last of seven, so he was 50 when he had me. So I kind of grew up with all the good stuff.
Yeah, the old school stuff.
Yep, that's it.
That's great. That's fun. Let's see. So now next one is the last movie you cried at. I don't know if you're a crier.
Oh, man. It got to be a war movie, probably Lone Survivor, maybe. War movies do that to me. That's the only movie that really drives that emotion out of me. A war picture will do that. Saving Private Ryan.
I feel like Lone Survivor.
I cried during that.
Lone Survivor was an underrated movie. I feel like that was a great film.
I was actually fortunate enough to meet Marcus Luttrell, man. What a story. What an awesome guy. Just an inspiration, man.
If anybody hasn't seen it, I highly recommend that you go check out the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling on HBO. It's available on HBO Go or HBO On Demand. Now, it's Judd Apatow, who is a kind of a Padawan, Gary Shandling was his mentor, and he went through his old notebooks. The family allowed him to go through it, and he was going through it, and he was reading this guy's journals and kind of put together this really solid documentary. And I don't want to ruin anything for it, but the chasm that I just jumped is because Lone Survivor, the way that it was done, was influenced by Gary Shandling. And that's all I will say. So check out the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. All right, next question. If you could have any job besides the one you have now, what job would you like to have?
Podcasting host, man. Number one show in the country. Are you kidding me? Yeah, let's go, Justin.
I like it. You and me both, brother. all right. What do you want most for your kids?
Healthy, wealthy, successful, you know, the best of the best.
Do you? But is it, you know what I mean? Like, is there any one of those excuse me, a gun to your head, if you know, you had to pick one, because obviously we'd want them to have it all, right? But is there one that you prioritize above another?
Happiness. I want them to learn to make themselves happy and not go out there looking for somebody else to bring it to them. I want them to learn to make themselves happy.
And do you, how do you, because this is a thing I think is also a common thread, but I'm curious, in your mind, what do you think is happiness? Do you think, is it multifaceted, or is there a way to really zero in on what can make?
I think to me, happiness is feeling good about what you're doing at the current moment.
Ah, yeah. Because I think about this a lot, where there's a difference between, like, I don't necessarily want my kids to always feel good, right? Which I don't think necessarily means happy. I'm okay with struggle. I'm okay with a little bit of strife as long as they could take it in stride. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And the only way we grow is by failure. So just to give them that encouragement that, hey, even during the failures, make yourself happy because something good is occurring here. You're learning. You're growing. So stay on the course. Don't just give up because of the failure.
And what's the last argument you had with your spouse, if you could share? I'm always fascinated by I feel like marriage always kind of erodes down to you, where you have these little spats about the silliest of minutia in life.
Well, listen, we definitely have some silly minutia arguments. Our only real argument we ever had in the marriage that we had was about the Catholic school, public school debate. That was the real argument that we've ever had. But we have our silly little can opener arguments. Who left the door open? Believe me, that's an everyday occurrence in six people in the house here.
Yeah, what's the can opener argument? Can I know that one?
Just a simple. I don't know if you ever saw Everybody Loves Raymond there with the can opener episode.
Yeah,
it's similar to that. It's, hey, where's the can opener? It's in the drawer, and I'll be looking right in the drawer. I'll be like, hey, hon, there is no can opener here. I'm looking at it. She gets up off the couch, and bang! It's like she just manifested the can opener right there in the drawer.
That's great. And then what's? I'm curious too. The Catholic school, public school debate. Who is on what side?
Well, you know what it is. I was on the – well, listen, we're both Catholic school people, but when you're raising a family of six people, my wife stays home with the kids. I'm hustling all kinds of jobs. Like I said, I'm a full-time railroad mechanic, but I drive for Uber. I do a lot of little side hustles. So, but Catholic school, to send three children there, gets quite expensive. And it was just more of that, what do we want to sacrifice? What's more important? And it was just – it's a tough decision when you're trying to make those decisions.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And what area are you from?
I'm originally from the Bronx in New York. I grew up in North Jersey, and now I'm down in Middletown, in Central Jersey.
Oh, okay. And so did your wife also grow up on the East Coast?
Yeah, she's a Jersey City girl.
And how many kids do you have, and what ages, if I'm allowed to know?
We have four kids. We have three boys and a girl. We have 11, 10, 7, and 3. We got the princess at the end. If we didn't get her at the end, we'd have five.
Really? Is that what the plan was?
Oh, absolutely. You know it.
Man, you Catholics, you guys really know how to make a family. I mean, you guys.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I love everything about that. That's why the reason why I'm even on the podcast there with the topic is just because when I mention that to people and I say, how many kids you have? And I say four. Usually they look at me like I invented the fidget spinner or something, you know, and I'm like, hey, it's not really. It's a lovely experience, man, to have a big family. I love it.
Why? What? Like, did you grow up in a big family?
No, like I said, I'm the youngest of seven, but I really only grew up with my one brother in the house there. But.
Oh, because there's a big jump between you and the oldest.
My oldest brother is 60. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm 37. So there is a big jump. But my parents passed away in my early 20s before I had any kids. So I mean, there's a part of me that wanted to have the family too because of that, I guess, maybe. But.
Well, there's so many questions I have. I'm sorry. The big family dynamic. See, here's the thing. I think that there are people that are wired kind of two different ways, and I am not wired the way you are. I remember the time when we had my second son, Jack, and there was a time where it was a lot for us. Like, it was, you know, we felt like we were just two people living together. My wife and I couldn't really interact. And I don't know. I'd be curious to get your take on this, because I never look at people who have four or five kids or six kids and go, You're nuts. I can tell you that when you start getting into the double digits, that I feel like you're teetering on child abuse. I don't know how you could raise 10 kids, but that's an unfair judgment on my part. But do you look at people who have two kids and kind of struggle, and you're kind of like, ah, you pansy, suck it up and move on?
No, never. I never do that. Because, listen, I understand the challenges that, especially today, parents face, with both parents a lot of times working and And the whole idea and concept, I think, of parenting and family is looked at differently. Not as really, it's not looked at as the main goal in life, which I think it's the only goal in life is to grow up, have the responsibility of caring for your wife, caring for your children, seeing them better. I mean, what other greater accomplishment are you going to leave behind? Once they put you in the ground, everything else is all gone. The only thing you leave behind is your children. And that's you.
So you're a guy who doesn't matter what I do to make a living. That's just my job. Right. And if it can fulfill you, great. But what I really look to seek for, like what we brought up earlier with what you want for your kids, what Alec uses to seek his own happiness is it lies within his family.
Correct. And for me, like I'm a mechanic and I've been a mechanic for over 20 years. And people always like ask me questions about gearhead stuff. I hate mechanics. I don't even like cars. The only reason I do mechanics is because it was a simple skill that I was able to master. And it gives me the opportunity to pursue other interests. You know what I mean? It provides me the income to pursue things that I really do love. So
and what
I'm not passionate about the job I'm doing. I'm passionate about the things it's providing me, to I don't know if I'm wording that right, but.
Well, what kind of hours do you work when you're a railroad mechanic?
Well, right. The good thing about being on the railroad is that you can change your shift. Like you can change from 8 to 4, 4 to 12, or midnight to 8. And right now, currently, I work a shift that's at night. I work a night shift from 7 at night till 3 in the morning.
So you come home at 3 in the morning and then what? You get to sleep in until about 8 or 9 or you get up at 6 with the kids?
Yeah, exactly. I come home. Everyone's already asleep. And I come in. I have my little snack and then I go to sleep and I wake up. Yeah, 9:30. I got the whole day ahead of me.
That's great. I used to work morning radio and that was the nice part about it is that you would be done with your work day at about 10 or 11 in the morning, and it felt like you got 2 days out of one, even though I had to go to bed at 7 o'clock in order to get up that early. But, it's not a bad lifestyle. So you get to – do you do a lot of – I don't know if your sons are into it, but do you get to coach a lot of the sports or
I coach – just this season, it just so happens that this season I'm not coaching any sports this spring. But, yeah, usually every season I'm coaching at least one or two sports. I've coached, soccer, Little League, flag football, all of it.
Break it down for me because I'm always curious for people who have more kids because, again, I always think it's a matter of perspective, right? We're all doing our best. We're all trying to make the best life that we can for our kids. And sometimes it feels like a struggle and sometimes it feels like it's going awesome.
That's the drama, yeah.
Right, right. And so for me, like right now, I have two kids, and each of them are in flag football, and I'm helping out with each of their
awesome.
Flag football teams. They're taking
NFL Play 60 League or no?
No, it's the local high school team. The coaches got together and said, you know what we should do is the kids are coming into high school in Southern California. I don't know how things are on the East Coast, but in Southern California, we don't like gluten, which I don't think if you are anti-gluten – chances are you're not into butting heads with each other, even if it's covered in plastic and padding. So these kids are coming into high school and they've never played a down of football in their life.
So they're coming in a little soft in the tush.
And without any football knowledge whatsoever, which I think was a bigger issue for the coaches. You could have a kid who's tough, who could come in and wants to hit, but also doesn't even understand the game of football.
It's definitely one of these things. It's almost like how we try to tell our kids to stay away from the smartphones and the screens while our face is buried in it. It's like
correct.
We're trying to make these kids aggressive while we just taught them how to not hurt anybody. So it's really a difficult message we send.
Well, I do think that there is something to be I like personally. I know there'll be people who disagree, but I like what the NFL is doing in making it to where guys are safer. And because here's the thing, I could still enjoy football, and I think that the less that it is about trying to take the head off of the guy, the more that the game is actually brought to light. And it's not, I'm not against them butting heads or trying to tackle each other because I like that part of the game too, but I never really enjoyed watching a guy get laid out and then him not being able to get up, because all I can think about, especially as a family man, is that this guy has prepped his entire life. He's probably gotten out of college a year earlier just so he could have this moment and this shot. And I want him to have as long a career as he possibly can, because what he has a talent and an ability that deserves to be compensated and deserves that opportunity, in my opinion. And I know that there's no way you can avoid a guy tearing an ACL and he's done, like if he does it a couple times. And I know that's hard to do, but I think if you could do a little bit to where you don't have to worry about the guy struggling with addiction or depression because he's had multiple concussions, I think it's great.
See, I think that holds true. Like if you're sitting in the in your little, you know, your sports den at home and you're watching the game, you cringe when the guy gets hurt. But when you're in the atmosphere, I mean, if anything, you look back through history. I mean, Roman Colosseum, when you're amongst a large group of people, we have, as human beings, a tendency to just really love and embrace violence when we see it. So it's like when you're amongst the people, when you go to a football game, the experience is completely different. And that's what it is. Like you're around these people. When a big hit happens, everyone, it gets amped up. And they're like, yeah, what a hit. And and you get sucked into it, into the atmosphere of it.
Yeah, and it's that reminds me of Adam Carolla has a theory along these lines that I find interesting, where he says that the more, you know, kind of refined, which is kind of what we're talking about here, is that we, you know, the more we talk about our feelings and want kids to use words and stuff like that, the more sensitive and politically correct we become as a culture, the more that the opposite end of that spectrum also rises. So he attributes the rise of like cage fighting and the MMA above boxing is kind of a compensation for our animal brain because everything else is so touchy-feely. Be careful. Don't offend anybody on the other side of it.
Of course. And there's certain things that are driven in us from as far back as we came onto the scene here on the spinning planet. You know, and one of those things is that need for aggression, that fighting instinct. That's why we have so many soldiers and warriors. We have that in us, that hunting nature that's in us. And another one of those things happens to also be, you know, to multiply, to have children. So that's why people that, you know, when they're not having kids and they're like, well, that's not my goal. It's like, well, why do you think you want to have sex so much? You're here, you're designed to procreate, and you deny yourself that. Of course you're going to have some issues mentally. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's spoken like a true Catholic. It's funny because I just did a segment on KFI AM 640, the radio station out here. I do a weekly parenting segment, and I just did one about the cost of kids. And the research that I've seen is that a DINK, I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but it's dual income, no kids. So these are the very people you're talking about in general, based on, you know, research and surveys and things of that nature. In general, they are happier than a person with a family with children. But what people with children feel like they are leading a more fulfilled life. And here's what I think of that, and I think it's kind of what you're talking about, is that I think that innately we need to have a little bit of struggle. We need to have a little bit of hardship. And I'm not saying that people who don't have kids just live a footloose, fancy-free life, but I feel like when you have kids, there's always something to interrupt you being able to do something that you want to do or for you, and there's a certain amount of character building that comes out of that without intention. It's just a consequence.
Of course. And I would say to that, like the people that say, well, the cost of having kids is too high. And I would say to them, hey, listen, down the line, you may find out that the cost of not having kids was much higher.
Right. Because you don't want to. The guy I used to do this podcast with, Chris Booker, he's in his early 40s and not going to have kids, doesn't want kids. His girlfriend is much younger than him. He's living the playboy lifestyle. Right. But he finds himself. We would compare notes in our life. And I would always say, you don't want to have kids. Don't worry about it. Right. But then he said, you know, what's funny is what I don't want to be is 60 and looking back and going, man, I wish I would have had kids. You know what I mean? Like being able to coach the kids flag football league or having a catch in the backyard, that kind of stuff is appealing to him. But he also knows that he's incredibly self-centered and that everything else that come with it would not fit well for him.
And a lot of it, too, is a lot of people say, you know, it's going to make them uncomfortable. Everyone wants to know, I'm not ready. And nobody is ready.
Oh,
you're
going
to be uncomfortable. And that's the other thing, too, when you say, like, during the day, you have your ups and your downs. I expect the downs to come. I know they're coming. I know there is no world where no downs exist. So when you look at it, just expect. When you see them, say, yep, look at that. There's that one. And you just spot them out and point them out. Say, look, look at how crazy that went wrong, you know?
Yep. Blue-collar guys are always so much more well-adjusted than the rest of the world. That's
We fail a lot. We fail a lot. And you learn a lot from failing. You can't grow unless you fail. So, I mean, that's, I think, why you see that.
How often do you feel like you tell your kids that phrase? Because I feel like I'm saying it all the time right now.
I say a lot of phrases to them a lot of time. But, yeah, I definitely say that one to them a lot.
What's the most common thing you're spouting off to your kids?
Just the importance of treat other people the way you want to be treated. It's this very simple concept, I think. If you just keep treating people the way you want to be treated, you're going to be treated that way. It's just the way the universe works.
The golden rule, as they call it. Yeah,
I mean, it's been proven. It's just stick with what works.
You seem like such a grounded, well-adjusted guy, and I know that we're just meeting each other right now, so I'm sorry if I'm flirting with you, but...
That's fine.
But my question is that when do you also have moments where you snap or lose it at your kids or within your household?
Of course.
And what happens when Alec loses it?
I'm a human being. Yes, that's one of the things. Yes, you're going to have fights. You're going to say things that you regret. I fail as a dad. I say things that I regret to my kids. Of course I do that.
And what do you like? How do you? Is there moments where, like, your wife will come and point it out to you, or do you kind of feel it after the moment and then go back and apologize?
At this point, I'm honest with myself. I know the moment that I'm wrong. I think most of us do. It's just a matter of admitting it when you see it. It's just when you know it's wrong, correct it right away. Don't wait. Correct it. Don't be afraid to admit it. And when you do it, if it was to your son, your daughter, your wife, get over there and admit your mistake and move forward. That's it.
Are you more aware of it now than when your first kid was born?
Yes,
yeah, by far. Right?
Of course I am. Yes. And I'll tell you what, going from two to three kids, that's a very big struggle on a lot of families. For us, it was a very big challenge. Going from three to four was nothing. It was very simple. So, and it's different for everybody, depending on the ages of the kids and stuff and your parenting lifestyle and everything. But it is difficult and it's going to be difficult. So don't expect it. Don't think you're going to get in there and get married, have kids and have that perfect life. It doesn't exist. No one has it.
Before we take a break, I want to ask you, tell me a little bit about the difference of boys versus girls in raising them as a dad.
I'll tell you one that just happened recently here, because this never happened with any of my boys. And this goes with like the little girl attitude or whatever. But my daughter is three, and I made her, you know, made dinner for everybody the other night. A little chicken, a little side, green beans, and some rice-a-roni. And she flipped out on the rice-a-roni being on the plate that she didn't want to eat it. So she made this big huss about it. I moved it away from the food. No good. So I had to actually throw the rice-a-roni off the plate. This is cut the story short. I mean, this went on for about 10 minutes of her screaming and crying about the rice-a-roni. So I had to actually put the food on a brand new plate. It wasn't good enough that I scooped it off. So then she eats dinner. 5 minutes after she's done, she goes, "Dad, can I have a bowl of rice-a-roni?" I said, "What?" She goes, "I love rice-a-roni." And my wife wasn't home. It was just me with the fire. I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" I'm looking around like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "Yeah, I like rice-a-roni." So I was like, I thought I was in a Twilight Zone.
I do. Here's the thing. I only have two boys. They're 9 and 6. But that's what you described there is what I imagine having a daughter is like. In the most
That's it. I mean, it's in simple capsule form. That's pretty much what happened.
It just seems like an Inception level mind game on all levels. And I don't know if I'm accidentally being sexist on this, but I just imagine that a girl's ability to manipulate the situation, and I don't necessarily mean it in a bad way, because trust me, my younger son is very manipulative, and he has a superpower when it comes to that stuff, and I'm just trying to teach him to use it for good and not evil.
And we could all learn a lesson from their persistence, too.
Oh my gosh, right? But is it that? Is it just a lot of, like, what feels like a psychological war game that's going on sometimes?
Hey, listen, too. I mean, I'm very early. I'm sure there's a lot of dads that'll listen to this and just saying, licking their lips, "Wait, just wait, just wait." So I'm taking it as it comes. And my wife just painted her room pink the other day. She finally slept in her room for the first time overnight. I mean, she's the print. The whole house revolves around her now. She's the star of the show here.
Really?
So, I mean, it's been great to see my boys just respond and react to her, you know, just all individually, the way that they all have.
They're on board. I mean, I'm sure they're sibling spats, but is it more the boys between each other and the little girls out of it, or what?
Of course, yes, yes. And
really?
Then they'll try to stick up for one of the boys that's, getting verbally beat by one of the others, you know, so she'll try to stick up for them when they're, you know, she always goes for the one that's getting attacked, never for the one that's attacking. So
they're not jealous of her or anything like that?
No. Well, I guess they're all jealous in their own way at certain points when they all want their own attention. They all need a certain little finesse, a little different parenting style. So I don't know if it's a jealous or not, but they all need their own time and care, and we try to do our best to make sure they each get it, you know?
Ah, that's good stuff. I'm glad that you reached out via the internet. You're a good man, Alec. I hope that you know it.
Yeah, well, I hope to encourage other men, other dads out there to just embrace the fatherhood here, man. It's awesome lifestyle.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to spin the prize wheel. We're going to see where it lands.
No whammy.
Let's see. Oh, we got suburban rage. So when we come back after this message, Alec and I are going to talk about our first world suburban problems that are not real problems after this.
That PTA bitch giving you the stink eye. The drive-thru just screwed up your order. And your neighbor's Yorkie Terrier doesn't stop fucking barking. That's right. You don't have real problems. It sounds like you have suburban rage.
All right, Alex, I'll go first on this one because this is something that recently came up that I'm going to fully admit that this drives me nuts in an unfair manner. I went into like just a regular store. I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head, but they were obsessed with the saying hello when you come in. Like everybody's got to say hello. Like, and I
forgot. The welcome committee.
Yeah. And it's not, here's the thing. I don't mind the geriatric 88-year-old guy making a buck at Walmart because he doesn't want to be sitting at home watching Westerns. I'm totally fine with that. I don't have any problem with the single guy, but it's the, every time I walk in the door, you got to say hello, because here's the thing. People can't pay attention to who's walking in and out, right? And so when I come in and then I forgot something in the car and I go back out and I come right back in to get the exact same hello, diminishes the hello right out of the gates, number one. Number two is that why do we think, have you ever gone someplace and walked in, Alec, and maybe this is just a guy thing, I don't know, but I've never walked into a place and had nobody say hello and been offended. And I feel like if we start making this a convention where all businesses or some management consultant company is telling you, well, you got to greet people when they walk in, that's numero uno. Otherwise, they're going to find you 60% less satisfactory. I just feel like we're making the society more narcissistic accidentally, and that's not what we really want. That there's a difference between just politeness, and I'm fine with when I walk up to check out, you just say, hey, how are you? Like, and that's normal. That's real. But to have to force them to make it a thing where every time you walk in, oh, that's what it was. It was a sushi place near here that I walked in to get the food, and then I realized, and they all said hello, and then not in the sushi convention, because I think that's a sushi restaurant thing, or not like a nice right. one where they all go, hey, like when you come in. Right. I've been to those places, but this is different.
I'll tell you what, if they have the welcoming guy there, it'd be nice if he smacked you with a coupon at least, you know, before you come into the store. At least provide you with a little tote bag or a little something to go along with the hello. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, you've solved their problem, Alec. You're absolutely correct. If there was something to benefit besides a greeting, because the greeting
right now. Yeah, what's the hot item of the week? Or buy one, get one, hit me with a little sushi sample.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, samplers. That's something that you create an even more positive experience doing it that way, as opposed to just a nonchalant greeting that seems forced.
And if you got a food store there, let the people sample the marijuana. This way they develop a hunger when they're shopping.
That's right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I would be curious to see if I haven't gone into a dispensary. It's now. Is it recreational legal where you live?
I think it's been a long time for me since I looked into it. But I think you have to have a medical permit or something.
Okay.
Like that.
It's
not legal in Jersey, no.
In California, we just went recreational. And I want to cruise by just to see what the experience is, because now what's happening is you're hearing radio ads and stuff for them.
Right.
And it sounds like what I like about it is the radio ads make it sound like there's like you have a weed concierge or a sommelier, where it's a very high class experience to walk in and figure out how you're going to get high. Trust me, at some point, I'm not a big fan of the marijuana. I did a little bit in high school, I think, like everybody. It's not like I'm going to be sitting here, you know, pretending like I have glaucoma and I want to be, hey, kids, hang out. Dad needs to check out. I'm not really there. My kind of check out and relax a little bit is I'll go out and sit by my fire pit, have a nice bourbon on the rocks and smoke a cigar. I really like that. But
I'll tell you what, I'm with you there. I'm not big into the whole weed scene, but if I could get in a time machine and go back in time, I would rather the country be more full of people on weed than on alcohol.
That's true. Yeah. I am curious to see how this, because the big concern that they had when it was on the ballot here in California was that it looked like it was going to pass, but we had out of date traffic laws. So, for instance, the only laws for you to be driving under the influence were based on alcohol consumption. And so they were like, well, people could be driving under the influence of weed and they could mow down a preschool and we wouldn't have any way of they would just walk free after that. I'm like, no, they wouldn't. You have impaired. Like there's an impairment definition within the law. But I'm curious to see if that becomes like eventually we have WAD, which is our mother, or I guess it would be what? MAWD, Mothers Against Weed Driving or something?
Yeah, something like that.
We'll see.
Well, it's just common sense. If you've hung out anywhere in any particular scene and you've been around people that are smoking pot and you've been around people that are drinking tequila, you know where your experiences are going to be better. I mean, it's not common sense.
Yeah, because especially as a foodie, to go back to what you were saying earlier, if I'm high, I would love to have an in-depth conversation, more in-depth than I've ever had about brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts than before. That just sounds like a delightful evening to me, as opposed to, you know, fuck you, bro. Fuck you.
Right, exactly. That aggressiveness all comes out, especially at the young age. All these young guys that are doing it, they want to kick everybody's ass.
Right, and marijuana is a cure for nausea, as opposed to feeling like you got a heave because you had too much tequila, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a better experience. You know, I don't know why. You know, like I said, I'm glad to see it becoming more mainstream, and hopefully, it means that alcohol and cocaine and all these upper drugs will take a back seat.
You know, if I get a weed sponsor after this episode, Alec, I'm going to give you a cut. All right,
that sounds good.
You just made this happen. But so you're on board with the greedy. Do you have any kind of not real problems that are problems, or any kind of pet peeves in the world that we live in?
I got two, especially like you see it commonly here. I guess you see it on the West Coast, but the parents that have their kids on the leash in the malls, that drives me nuts. I don't know how that ever became popular.
Is it? It feels a little lazy, right?
I understand that if it's like a group of autistic kids or if it's like a certain.
Yeah,
I understand that. I'm not saying anything about that, so I don't want to get hammered by anybody. But
no,
The normal mom that's just got the one kid and she's walking there with him on a leash. I just think that something has happened wrong in our society that's happening.
Well, and I think it comes from kind of your blue collar background, because I've noticed this too, where it's like what it is that you and I would like it to be. And again, we're not talking about a kid with special needs, obviously. But you and I would like to live in a world where instead of relying on a leash is that there would be like I never had to worry about my kids in a parking lot. From the time they were like 2 or 3 years old, I would just say, hey, stay close, which is a kind of to a lot of people, I think it seems derogatory because I'm treating them like a dog, like heel. Like, I would just say like, hey, there's cars around here. Get close. And I never had to worry about them darting. But and it's like what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode with struggle and stuff like that, is that when you remove that kid's need to be aware of what's going on around them, sure, it keeps them safe, but there's a little bit of self-reliance that gets sucked out of them.
Yeah, there's no growth.
Yeah, they don't get to learn to kind of keep their head on a swivel in a parking lot to make sure that they don't get clipped by a Chrysler 300, in my opinion.
And it is amazing. So I wonder sometimes, and I know, and sometimes we forget quickly because we're parents now, but I'm sure I was the same pain in the ass in the parking lot. But it's like sometimes I wonder, like with my seven-year-old, I'm like, didn't you see that car? what were you looking at? Like, it's like...
Well, we had it. It's so funny because, you know, the people, it's down from, I think it's the 60s, over 69% drop off in kids walking or riding a bike to and from school from the 60s to today. So two-thirds or more of kids are no longer walking or riding a bike to school. And I think when we were kids growing up, we constantly had look left, look right, you know, you know, McGruff the Crime Dog and Smokey Bear were telling us not only to not let our dad flick his cigarette into the forest, but also you got to look both ways before you cross the street. And I had a similar situation where we were just on a walk in our suburban neighborhood here in Burbank. And my kid just kind of started to walk. And I yell and go, hey, like, and because he was probably 15 feet in front of me. And I said, dude, you're not even looking. And he was like,
oh, such a scary thing when you see that coming, man.
Right. And so, but then the next crosswalk that we had, he looked, but he's looking the wrong way. And I just realized that I take it for granted because I had like, look left, look right, look left, and then walk.
You know what you're doing.
Right. I just had that beat into my head as a kid so much, and they don't have that because they don't need these PSAs because for the most part, they're living in a bubble. In New Jersey, do kids still ride their bikes around?
Yeah, you see it, not nowhere near as. And I'll tell you another thing, along with not riding the bikes, the parks, when you drive by any of the parks, they're all empty. There's nobody playing in them.
Yeah.
So it's like my kids, I mean, we're out in the backyard. I got a little basketball court thing in the backyard here. They shoot hoops in the backyard. We live on a busy street, so they don't ride their bike out front. But it's just there's so many different places that are available, but the kids aren't there. They're not out there.
And it's, I just finished this book and talked about it on a recent episode, Octoon Baby, and I still think about this all the time, that I'm just curious to see what would happen, or what it would take, is a better way of phrasing this, for us to have the same, a cultural shift to go this direction. But in Germany, it's nothing for you to leave a four-year-old at a playground and walk around the corner and go have a coffee where you can't even see your kid.
Well, that was the United States not too long ago.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah. And that when you said that we live on a busy
awesome society to live in, I mean, wouldn't that be great?
I think so. Like we're and I wonder, I'm curious
and
to
it's
see.
It's possible. It's not that far away. It's attainable. It really is.
It is. And I wish I knew without a shadow of a doubt, right? Because the reality is that what we're all doing is we're all hedging our bets. It's like even you said, and I'm the exact same way. My kids
called faith.
My kid's 9 years old, and he can ride a bike, but he doesn't really ride it around, right? Unless we all go as a family or something. But then the little one up enough, so it's like I can't get the whole family of ducklings to follow in line on a bike yet. But I have friends who they've had their kids on those like balance bikes without the pedals since they were like two. So by the time they were four, they rode a bike without training wheels. That's like twice their size. Like they're on it, and they're going on bike rides all the time. But I'm curious to see, because I interviewed an author, Julie Lithcott-Hames, a long time ago. How to Raise an Adult is the title of her book. And if you haven't heard me talk about it or heard that episode, go back and give it a Google and definitely read the book. It's a great book. But she talks about how this whole stranger danger and everything came from in the late 80s and early 90s. There were like four high profile kidnapping cases.
Yes,
and
I remember watch out for the van, the red van or the white van, whatever it was.
Right.
I didn't mean to cut you off there, Justin.
No, that's your, I don't care. But because of that, they were highly publicized, and that the kids who grew up from that era became kind of hyper protective of their kids, and that we, in our minds, we're hedging our bets, right? We're like, even like you said, your kids live on a busy street, so we don't let them ride outside on the bikes. But I can't remember there being a street I couldn't cross on a bike when I was a kid. And we joke that it's like our parents didn't care about us as much as we care about our kids. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying it's necessarily wrong. I hope I'm making this make sense, is that I am weary of it, but I'm not saying it's wrong. But I do think that there is a certain element where you can care too much and have an unintended consequence, right?
What do they call it? Like helicopter parenting or something to that effect? You definitely want it's very hard to – even the football that you – like you said, your kids are in the flag football. As a kid, we didn't have that. We created the games in the neighborhood. We played kids from other neighborhoods. And we would just set up the time and the place, and whoever showed up, we didn't know who we were playing. We played violent games of football, and there was no parents there. There was nobody to tell us what the rules were. We made the rules. We settled all the disputes. We did all that stuff as kids.
Do you feel like whenever you watch your kids play in like a group, right? I don't know if you have, like, if you ever do go to a playground, or maybe you have a play date or something like that with three or four kids.
Yeah, well, I hammer that word in one of my episodes there, that play date. Oh, that drives me nuts. You know? That word. The play date. Yeah, I tell my kids it's a hangout. That's what we call it here. But I want to have a hangout. Just don't say play date. It hits my brain like a spike.
You know what? It's funny that's. I'm laughing so hard because I couldn't agree with you more. And I was just kind of it's fun because it's become a part of our vernacular.
Yeah.
Like you can't if I say hangout or whatever, they're gonna like, what do you mean, like a play date? Like,
right. Terrible. Yeah, I cringe when I hear it. You can't avoid it though.
Where were you when you first heard the word play date? Like, how was it, your first kid?
My
or?
First kid, yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah.
Preschool,
he's
or what?
11 now, he's about to be 12, but it's been around for a while. I mean, it was never around when I was a kid, so I don't know, somewhere between my misspent adolescence there and parenthood, you know, that word popped up.
Well, it here's what it comes from. It comes from nobody hanging out outside. And so when you kids don't just, like, when the kids have to, it's funny because there's an element where having engaged parents really truly is a good thing. Like you going out and shooting hoops with your kids or playing a pickup game of horse and stuff, that's fun family memories that as a very tight.
Things that my dad never did with me. So
right.
It's like my dad never taught me how to throw a ball or ever came out and showed me how to ride a bike or did any of those. You kind of learn them things as a kid. Like your mother would say, hey, it's a nice day.
Get out.
The hell out of the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, that's all you were told.
Yeah. I'm curious, would you say that your father was neglectful in any way, shape, or form?
No, it's this is the thing too. It's a lot of times we try to revert to how our parents were as to how we parent. It's a new time. It's like trying to compare a quarterback today from a quarterback to the '50s.
Yep.
Everything was different when he was parenting, just like everything is different now. So he was who he was. He parented the way he thought possible, just like I'm doing. I'm parenting the best way I think possible.
But the reason I bring it up is because I feel like there's a moment where parentally we become like salmon. And that everybody's just kind of swimming upstream and not necessarily looking for a possible path of least resistance, or not thinking about, well, what happens when we get up here to the stream other than the good time sex and then we all die. But the salmon was a horrible analogy on my part. But my point is like, if we're all just going in this direction and not sure why or what the result is, even though it doesn't feel right to us. And that's why I bring up is that my dad was the exact same way. Like he was never up in my face. But if I ever needed anything, he was there. And the thing that a dad did before was he provided. And I'm not saying that if you're a stay-at-home dad that you're not providing for your family. That dynamic, I think, is a plus. Even my own father said on this show, he said that he thinks it's great that there are more stay-at-home dads because it wasn't an option. He would have loved to be able to hang out and just be a dad with me if that's the way things were. He said, but that wasn't even on the table. I
talk about that as well, because we had the big shift where women went into the workforce and everyone was supporting them. But where was the support for the guys who now became the household dad? You know,
right.
There's no big march for them or no support groups for them.
Right. Well, it's because we're not vocal about it. We're too busy having hangouts and throwing back some IPAs, complaining about the word playdate is what we're
doing. Holding on to my leash.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's fun times. Let's take another break and we'll come back and do a little moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
All right, Mr. Lace, would you like to go first or would you like me to go first?
Let's go. I'm ready.
All right, go for it. Hit me.
All right. My middle guy decided to start a fire downstairs in the fireplace. So he got some cardboard.
I forget that over there you guys have fireplaces. I just thought he was going to start
a fire. Yeah, we got a fireplace here. So he thought it would be a heat of your life. He thought you had to start the fire outside the fireplace and then bring the fire into the fireplace for some reason. So he was trying to do it right outside. And all of a sudden, we're starting to smell the smoke. I said, well, what the hell is that? You know what I mean? And then we come downstairs, and right in front of the fireplace, a nice ball of fire there. So we had to run, grab the fire extinguisher, and put it out.
That's awesome.
And then quickly, he got his fire safety talk, which I don't think we stopped talking for about 25 minutes about different experiences, showing him pictures of fires. And we hammered him with about every Smokey the Bear comment you can imagine.
Right, which is another example of, you know, it's funny that as much as we made fun of them, but those PSAs did a lot of parenting for our parents, I imagine. We'd be watching Captain Lou Albano's wrestling on Saturday morning cartoons, and then afterwards we go, oh, okay, so don't play with fire? All right, got it. Back to Captain Lou Albano.
It's just like G.I. Joe, the more you know, and now you know, or whatever.
I got it right here.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
Right?
That's it. I love them G.I. Joes, man. That's one of the greatest things about this YouTube and technology. I can actually show my kids the same shows I watch. That's awesome.
Oh, isn't it fun, too, to watch them like be able to? It's both fun, and because I'm not as grounded a person as you are, I'm so jealous and frustrated with their ability. Like, oh, we recently watched every episode of Third Rock from the Sun, which is not something I could have done when I was younger. And then also now we're watching every episode of ALF, which was one of my favorite shows when I was their age. And it's just no big deal. Like their world, you just cast things into the ether and it arrives for you.
Then they make their comments. Like I'll show them the old He-Man She-Ra cartoon and they'll be like, Dad, this guy's mouth's not even moving. You know? I'll be like, just shut up, watch the episode there, you know? But one thing I love with my kids, I watch it. I have every episode on DVD of the Three Stooges. I'm a big Three Stooges guy. So I always try to pick a time during the week where we sit down and watch one Stooge together, just the guys.
Do they all laugh, hysterically?
They love it.
Yeah. Yep. It is fun to watch them. It's the thing I miss Maybe I'll get them on the Stooges too, because I was just talking about this. I take my kids to a barber shop, and it's funny because it was kind of an unintended thing. It wasn't really the idea, but then when I got them all in there, and I got the guys in the barber shop were all kind of having guy talk, you know.
Right.
I was like, oh, this is good, and my kids were talking, and I go, this is a good social skill for them to learn, is that, you know, and because the guys don't tease them because they know that they're kids. But occasionally I'll give them like a look if my kid says something that's not really part of the conversation. And I'm okay with that. Like, because they're not getting hurt. They're learning. That's because one of the things that my younger son's barber did was he was trying to find a way to relate to this, you know, 5-year-old kid. And he goes, what did you want for Christmas? Or what'd you get for Christmas? Now, mind you, it's July when he's having this conversation with my kid. And my son goes, oh, I got a Barbie. And and the guy he couldn't resist it. He just shot him a look. And it was great because I truly believe that is exactly why my son wanted that stuff. I've told this story way too many times. I'm going to share it real quick with you, Alec. He wore a pink shirt to preschool one time, and all of the teachers and everybody made a big deal because that's a color for girls, and he liked it. And my younger son, he likes to stir the pot. He loves to poke the bear. So instantly, from that moment on, he became in love with everything that is girls. He loved that it got a reaction when because he wouldn't do it when it was just us. But when we'd go out with his friends to McDonald's, he would ask for the girls' toy in the Happy Meal. And then there's an unintended consequence that I don't even think he's aware of at this age, but then it made it to where, because there's girls that are friends, so he was instantly hanging out with the chicks at the party, and now he's taking dance class, and I told my wife, I go, man, we got to watch this kid, because he's going to be pulling down so much tail, it's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, and that's what's good, too. Like, sometimes, as a parent, you see that your kids get involved in different things that you do. My kids, they all play chess. They're big into chess, and my oldest, I actually just put him in the Jersey State Tournament here.
Oh, right.
Very, very good. But that's one of those things, like, I never played chess as a kid. These guys are into things that I'm not, and I'm willing to learn, man. I'm willing to adapt, change, grow, develop. I'm ready. So, like some dads like, oh, these kids didn't grow up the way we did. So learn how they're growing up. It's not that difficult. Everything is available on your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, just get in. That's all you got to do.
That's it.
My dad did the same thing because he hates sports. He's not a sports guy, but I wanted to play football. So he couldn't coach the football, but what he could do was he could get on the board of the Pop Warner football team. And so he helped out with the organization and administration, and it was only so he could be around and watch me practice.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome.
Find a way to be invested in what I was doing.
Yeah, I coached soccer for a few years. About 5 years I coached. I don't know. I still don't even know what the positions are. I don't even know how to play soccer.
Right?
It's just the 4 or 5-year-olds that I coach. And I love that, man. That's the best age to coach kids.
I feel like that's 95% of the dads in America, at least. Like, I have no idea how this game works, but here we go.
Yeah.
Do you have any others before I move on? I know I took you down a rabbit hole and we got to chatting, but...
Yeah, no, I get the 4 kids here. I give you one on each of them, but let's see what you got over there, Justin.
So my four... For my younger son, going back to the football thing, is that the last couple weeks he's had the games didn't go his way, and so he was kind of struggling. And both of them were. My older son was playing quarterback, is playing quarterback for his team, and he'd thrown some interceptions and just was kind of frustrated with the way the game was going. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that he's in an older kids league now. He was the older kid, and it was a kindergarten through second grade league, and he was the second grader. Now he's a third grader in a third, fourth grade league, and so he's on the younger side of things. And another part of it was the coach that's coaching his team is kind of new to the league and is figuring out, oh, we need to have guys blocking and blah, blah, blah. And but they were both kind of frustrated. And last week, my younger son, we moved him. I coach his team or help out with the offense. And so we moved him off of quarterback and put him in at running back because he's a better runner. And he scored like 5 touchdowns. And it was fun to watch him get into it. And then he made some plays on defense. And so he was just kind of, it was rebuilding his confidence. And I like watching that. But the thing I'm most excited about is that next week, my hope is that when he has a struggle, I told him, I said, well, this feels good now. I said, but you got to hang on to this good feeling when it's not going as well. And that because next week it's going to be a tougher team and you might not play as well or have as much success. And that's okay. But that's how you get better. You're going to struggle and then you're going to learn from whatever doesn't work and you're going to get better kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's great advice. I definitely, when I coach the flag football team, everybody hates playing the line, just like you can imagine. And nobody wants to do it. So one of the things I try to tell them to encourage them is like, guys, listen, when we score a touchdown, if you did your job on the play, you scored the touchdown.
Right.
Just because you don't have the ball doesn't mean you didn't score. We are a team. It's not like Johnny got 6 points. We got 6 points.
Correct.
Because you did your job. So you've got to try to make them feel important on every play. I
don't
know how boring I know it gets.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's the kind of stuff that makes these extracurricular sports kind of like the PSAs that we had when we were a kid.
Correct.
These little lessons become applicable. And when he was struggling, I talked about it on the show. I said that, I go, it's not the football I care about. It's not none. I don't care how many touchdowns you score, how many interceptions you throw. I really genuinely don't care about that. What I do care about is that you work hard and that you're good people. And that you have to persevere.
Others. Work with your teammates.
Exactly.
You know?
Of course. Yeah. And then with my older son was a little bit more. I got to see the fruition of that, where he was really frustrated. And I told him, I said, and he got emotional during his game because it was getting to him. And the coach was kind of shocked by it. He's like, and the coach had to pull him from the game.
And how old is he?
He's 9.
Okay.
And I said, son, he said, the coach put in another quarterback. And I said, I've told you this. I said, I'm not saying you can't be upset, right? I go, but you got to understand that there's a consequence to that. And it's just not the right time. And you can't be that upset over a flag football game when you're 9 years old. I can't help you other than to tell you to take deep breaths and try to calm yourself down. I said, but that's something you got to figure out in your brain. And I said, and the coach has to worry about the entire team. It's not just you. I said, so he's trying to figure out a game on the fly. And if you're not there for him and your team, then they're letting him down, and he's got to put you on the sideline and get somebody else in who can help him. I said, that's why you work together as a team, you know, kind of
that's
a thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, Josh, that's great advice, man. It's just the same thing. Like, if you're going to throw, anybody can celebrate after they throw a touchdown. It's easy to do that. Everyone can jump up and down and do a new dance and everything. But how do you walk off the field when you throw an interception?
Right.
That tells us who you are. And that's what you got to work on. You know?
That's what I told him. I said, I'm glad that this is hard for you. I said, because if you can't see it, you'll know it afterwards, is that you're going to be stronger and you're going to be better. If this whole year is easy, I go, you don't get better. I said, but the more you have to work and the more you have to fight and learn, then that's how you get better. I said,
that sounds like some first class fatherhood material.
Boom. Come on now.
Got a little spot there, Justin.
And so anyway, the part that came this week, he came into his game. He threw 3 interceptions. They lost the game, but he didn't get upset. He didn't let it get to him. He said, he goes, that part I did good. I said, perfect. I said, now next week you do the other thing I told you. And I said, you take a sack before you force a ball and throw an interception. And I said, and that's what's great about sports and the way that we're playing this here is, I said, each week you work on getting one thing. If you focus on fixing that one thing to get better, you put all your energy into it, you're going to get to it faster. I said, so next week, you're going to focus on just getting comfortable, letting guys rush at you, and waiting for an opportunity to throw the ball to the right guy, and you'll throw less interceptions. And then once you do that, you'll work on the next thing to get better. And so
you can even look at the best that's ever done it. I take my kids, I go to the cemetery where my parents are buried, and Babe Ruth is buried in the same cemetery in New York.
Wow.
So I'll always, as something to make it a little light, also my favorite actor, James Cagney, is buried there too. So I'll always kind of like take the load off the day by, after I go to visit them, I'll go see Babe Ruth and Jimmy Cagney. But Babe Ruth's grave, I always bring the kids over and show them, like, look at this guy. Every time you go there, there's baseballs, hats, cards, letters. There's all kinds of stuff over by Babe Ruth's grave. I say, this stuff is here not because this guy was a great baseball player. It's because of who he was as a person. You know, this guy struck out 7 out of every time he got up at bat. But this guy made a difference in so many people's lives. That's what he's known for. He connected with so many people.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a good – and this guy, he struck out. He probably struck out more than anybody else in his time. He was a big strikeout guy. But look at how well he's remembered. So you're going to strike out. You're going to fail. Doesn't mean you can't be successful.
Oh, I love it. You're like everybody's coach, Alec. I love it. That's our show. Don't forget to check out firstclassfatherhood.com. That's Alec Lace's podcast. It's a 15-minute episode that you'll get every day. He does interviews. He talks about what's going on in his parenting life. Check it out. It's a great show. Very popular. firstclassfatherhood.com. And of course, you'll be able to hear me on an upcoming episode, or depending when you're listening to this, it's already there. So you can go back and check it out if you haven't had enough of my bullshit and stupid laughter. But yeah, that's our show. All of the social media handles for this. Is there anything else that I should mention, Alec, before we jump out of here?
No, you hit it all, guys. Fatherhood's awesome. Let's talk about it.
I love it. I love all of it. All of the social media handles are in the description of this here episode. Hey, by the way, guys, we broke over 2,000 likes on Facebook. So the Facebook likes are getting closer and closer to the downloads. And I appreciate that. If you haven't already, go to Facebook.com/dadpodcast or on Instagram at dadpodcast. Give me a follow. You can follow the Dumb Dad Project that I'm currently working on. I'm building a fort for my kids in the backyard, and I've broken some stuff already, so you can get caught up on that if you aren't already. Again, Facebook.com/dadpodcast. Ooh, excuse me. Give us a like. And if you want to find other like-minded parents, don't forget about our fan page run by our very own Butcher Drew.
All right.
It's Staying Frosty with the Dad Podcast. Go check it out. They've got funny memes. It's a great place that you go, hey, I'm going through this. Did anybody have any advice, or have you been through this? One of the best things to come out of this show for me personally was when I was struggling after Jack, my younger son, was born, and I was just like, man, I'm trying to figure this out, and I feel like I'm failing everybody, yada, yada, yada. And I was talking about on the show, and I had this mom who did kind of what I think Staying Frosty with the Dad Podcast does for everybody who joins that group and checks it out, is that this mom sent me an email and said, I have two boys that are 12 and 9 years old, and they're the same age difference as my sons. And she said, I came home from work the other day and my husband was asleep on the bed. And I said, where are the kids? And he said, playing in the backyard. I curled up and we just kind of cuddled and took a nap for 20 minutes. And she said, it gets better. Don't worry about it. This is the hard time. And that, honestly, this is to her, this is probably just a quick email that she said, oh, I like this guy's show. But it really did give me like a light at the end of the tunnel to think, oh, they're young now. It's going to be a lot of effort, but there's going to be a little bit of a release where I can feel like I'm doing a better job. And she was right. And so I think that if you're in that headspace where you feel like you're struggling or not doing so hot, go check out Staying Frosty with the Dad Podcast. And you know, you'll find some nice friends there who will make you feel supported and make you feel like you're not alone. All right. So on behalf of Alec Lace of FirstClassFatherhood.com fame, check out his podcast. This is Justin Worsham saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.